You better come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be raining her do.
Come over here, kid. Wait, sir. You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic.
It's
then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You got to do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? And a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough! I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress. I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour. It's Michelle Anna Jordan live and in the flesh. I was not here last Sunday. I was in San Diego and I heard there was a little bit of problem with the show last week. So I apologize if you didn't get to hear Mouthful last week. The trip to San Diego was very short but very necessary. So, and it was interesting. I'll tell you just a little bit about it. You can read about it in my seasonal pantry column on Wednesday. But there's a lot of farmers markets in San Diego, like one in every neighborhood. But most of them are not certified. So it's interesting. I'm walking through this huge, huge, huge market. And it's like, well, wait a second. There's something different. And, you know, I'm not going to be all like exacting about it. You know, I'm a guest hanging out with a friend who lives nearby. But a lot of vegetables and fruits from the southern hemisphere, lots of things that have nothing to do with farmers markets. And I finally realized it's not a certified farmers market. And we're seeing more and more of those all over the country as I mean, I think part of it is good in that farmers markets are replacing the commons. You know, we don't meet in those town squares anymore like we used to. And a lot of places that we gather and talk about the community and catch up on the, you know, the politics of town and the gossip and everything is at farmers markets. So even if it's a non-certified market, they're still providing that. But you have to be educated to understand what to buy at a market that isn't certified. Otherwise, it's just like an outside grocery store. Got to be careful. Anyway, that was interesting. And San Diego was interesting. Visited my father's grave for the first time in many years at the really beautiful Fort Rosecrans Military Cemetery on Point Loma with just absolutely the most amazing view. Went to La Jolla Cove, where I haven't been in probably 35 years. Oh, gosh, I just wanted to walk over to the rocks where the enormous sea lions were sunning themselves and laying them. They just looked like gorgeous brown velvet. Of course, they wouldn't have felt that way, and they probably wouldn't have welcomed me. But they were surrounded by probably several hundred cormorants who were drying themselves in the sun. So it was a very nice trip. I packed a lot into 3 days, but I'm also glad to be home and glad to be here with you. We have a two-part show this evening, and we're going to be talking in the second part, we're going to be talking about honeybees with the Sonoma County Beekeepers Association, and it's spring, and part of what that means to me, and I could be totally wrong, and we'll find out from our guests, is that the bees are waking up and getting ready to start doing their spring things. I think that's at least partially true. But we've also been hearing a lot for a few years now about colony collapse and what that means and what we can do when we see a swarm at our house, which is really exciting and not as scary as it sounds. But before we talk about honeybees, we welcome back for, I don't know if it's the fourth or the fifth or the sixth year in a row, we always do something on the Redwood Emperor Chinese Association's
Yes, you're right.
Lunar New Year. It is Nancy Wong. Welcome back.
Thank you, Michelle, for having me here tonight.
You bet.
It's an honor to be here sharing our Chinese New Year celebration.
Well, I always look forward to this night. And if I've got it right, finally, your celebration is always the last Saturday of February. Is that right? Or pretty much?
Pretty much okay. This year. I think next year is going to be a little bit of change.
Uh-huh.
We're going to move up a little bit.
A little bit closer to the beginning?
Yes.
Okay.
That's our goal for, oh my goodness, I think it's going to be 15 years. We've been moving a little bit earlier.
Uh-huh.
We couldn't get it, but I think next year we got already.
Okay, so it's really a matter of getting the veterans building.
Yeah, the veterans center, building, yeah. Yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah, you probably have to push aside the Democratic Party crab feed. I think because they're in earlier February,
I think we're going to be the third week.
The third,
yeah,
great.
The third Saturday.
So this year it's happening on February 23rd. Doors open at 5. It continues until about 9:30, 10 o'clock. Not that late?
Not that late. Actually, we wrap up everything about 8:30, 8:45.
I probably think it goes later because I take my grandson
Lucas.
I have to drag Lucas out and he finds so many kids to play with.
That's right, because with our dragon and lion, the culture dance.
Yeah.
And this year we're adding a few new program. We're going to bring in the Chinese instrument, the music.
Oh.
Yes, erhu. And then also the guzhen, and we have some member is so talented to gonna share that music.
I think it was three years ago. You have what, the guzheng?
Guzheng, yeah, we're gonna having again, but it's not the same group.
Okay,
yeah, it's exchange student from China, and
that's a really remarkable instrument.
Yes.
I don't even know how to describe it.
Then another one is erhu. Erhu is like a two string. Music to play. It's really difficult piece instrument. But this lady is original from Beijing. She's living here in Sonoma County for I know her for so long. She's part of the Jumping Buddha's group, musician group. Now she's helping us to do some music background for our adult course.
Oh, cool.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And then also, in addition to that, you have martial arts demonstrations.
Yes, we do.
You have the Redwood Empire chain. You have the choir or something.
Yes,
singers.
We have singer. Yes, yes, we do that. And this year we're having another new group. It's because the Mandarin Chinese is so popular in Sonoma County, and we had a lot of school offering Mandarin, and we're going to have 17 students, I believe, is from a Sonoma Academy student. He's going to be singing in Chinese.
Oh, wow.
To some Happy New Year song. Then of course, our language school students going to have some really cute, unique program to present it to the guests.
Yeah. Now, this all happens pretty much after dinner as dinner is winding down. But there's a lot of activities before dinner as well, sort of in like little booths that run or little areas.
Let's talk
about that a little bit.
Okay. We do have two local children book authors coming, Camino and Peter Chen. There's all children book authors going to be, has their book there. Then we have Henry Koda. He's Japanese, but he's doing really good at folding the paper called origami.
Yeah.
He has his table there. Mm-hmm. Then we do have our language student for all the poster they make from their past, make the Chinese New Year poster. Then also have some parents doing a little bit of fundraiser for our dance costume. You will see every year we have a brand new costume and brand new culture dance presented to our guests. And this year, another two fantastic, brand new routine.
They're great routines, and some of them are with fans and with, I don't know if they're fans that open up flowers and ribbons. And
yes,
it's really magical.
Magical. We really work hard with all the parents helping. And then also we have a youth group selling the soft drinks.
Right, yes.
Then we do have a one-day ABC license to you know, the our local Lagunitas Brewing Company,
right,
the beers.
Lagunitas, that's great.
Then the wine company, we have JJ Custom Wines and also Vantage Wine Esther Company. These two wine company, we submit our own logo label.
Oh,
for
right.
our own wine. So the year the snakes, we have a special design.
You're the snake wine?
Yes. In there. Yeah. So, and also the Man St. George Winery, they also donate our wine for selling. I think because the copyright or something, only these two companies allowed to have, we can submit our own label. A wine to have some kind of memory and then souvenir. It's really unique. And actually, this idea is from the Vantage Wine Company. The owner suggested to me. I was so glad because 2010, our son's wedding, we use his, you know, for traditional Chinese banquet. We have all double happiness 2010.
Oh,
and,
nice.
Our own wine served on the table. That was really
That's really great.
Unique. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And then also, and I guess this goes on throughout the evening, you have up in front, right under the stage, you have
Silent auction
and raffle.
Raffle. Yes.
Yeah.
Our raffle is a little bit different from a lot of places because we learn. I don't want to win something I really don't need it. So we call the shoebox. We had all the different boxes.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way to do it.
Then you will choose whatever you like to win. So you put your raffle ticket in there. So if you win something you really like it or you really want it, you can use it.
Right.
That's really, I think it's really good idea. It's a lot of work for the committee, the raffle ticket committee. I appreciate what they're doing. But I think everybody.
I think it's a great way to do it. I think more people should do that.
Yes,
I've been to a couple, and it works out really well. In fact, I won something this last summer because I put all of my tickets into one little box. And let's talk about some of the details. It's $25 for adults, $10 for children 3 to 10.
Yes.
And one thing that's really important to know, as I fall off my chair here, no tickets are sold at the door.
Actually, this year we're going to do a little bit different.
Oh, okay.
Our board decided, because a lot of people want to do last minute things.
Yes, so, especially lately.
That's right. So we decided to hold some tickets.
Oh.
We're confident, we know it's going to be, you know, every year is a sold out event. But this year we're going to hold some tickets at the door. If you want to do the last minute before 5 o'clock, if you want to come and have a dinner, because we serve the food, and then enjoy our entertainment, we'd be glad to have a ticket at the door. That's our board decided to do that way. So I'm happy we can do that.
That's great because it means I can write about the event in my Friday column.
Yes,
because
please.
I couldn't write about it at the last minute if it was sold out. So that's really great. So you can just go to...
At the
vet building,
yes. And we have a reception right there. The people with the ticket and a welcome ticket, or you want to buy the ticket, we all had the people there to serve you, to help you. And also at the door this year, we're going to have a God Fortune grading with a beautiful costume. I think last year was there. No, this is the second year. Then with all the traditional princess Chinese a dress with a hair piece.
Oh, nice.
They're going to handing out a red envelope for children. And the River Rock Casino is going to be there hand out the play money for adults. You had to be over 21 to receive that. So we have the red envelope for the children. Then they're going to giving out the play money for the adult, a guest. Then we have a U.S. bank giving us really nice Chinese calendar too.
Right. Yes.
Yeah, so we always have there. But we can't give everyone. So on the first coming, first serve.
Serve, yeah.
You know. Then we have a beautiful program. I really want to appreciate all the local community and the company support us. Otherwise, we can't have this successful event consistently. To have every year. This is our 25 years.
25th year, wow.
Yes, to doing Chinese New Year celebration.
They've gone through the zodiac twice.
Oh, yes, yes. But, you know, because community starting and know us, what we do for the community, sharing our culture. Whenever we can help, we do it. Also, we provide, last year we provide 5 scholarship, Sonoma mm-hmm. County resident, senior high school.
Mm-hmm.
You had to be aging descent or our member. It's very easy mm-hmm. to apply. So very generous, our scholarship committee.
Mm-hmm.
We can give in all 5. I think this year we also going to give in all. Yeah, we have, we're going to do some fundraiser, but we also have some foundation particularly wants to donate uh-huh. to the scholarship.
That's really great. And again, the Year of the Snake Chinese New Year celebration yes. uh-huh. is taking place this coming Saturday, February 23rd. Doors open at 5 o'clock. Now, before you go, and you're welcome to stay while we talk about honey if you want to, but before we wrap up this part, is that for people who are wondering, what does the Year of the Snake hold? Is there anything that we can say? Any generalities?
Generality, you know, the snake, the Year of the Snake, I would say it's very intelligent, mm-hmm. also very independent. That's the Year of the Snake person.
Describes my grandson, that's for sure.
Really independent.
Very independent.
Uh-huh. Also intelligent, yes. Uh-huh. And I hope everybody can make it. It's so personal. You don't have to go to San Francisco, watch the parade. This is just yeah. right in your front. And, you know, we have a 250 feet long dragon.
The dragon and the lion. I love the dragon.
And the lion.
But then the lion. It's the lions.
Yeah, they come into the... down to the audience to, you know, chatting, play with uh-huh. all the people. I
and
mean, they
when
just
they
love.
First start waking up on
yes,
stage,
yes.
And, you know, so their eyelashes, and then when they start scratching the back of their head, I love them so much they make me cry. They're just, I mean, that is reason enough.
Thank you.
Just to go mm-hmm. and see the lion and the, dance and the dragon.
Also wonderful food.
Yeah, that I was going to say. And then yes. there's the...
we do have a vegetarian dishes. Uh-huh. Don't forget that. You don't eat any meat. We do have a special vegetarian dishes for the people don't mm-hmm. eat meat. Then we have barbecue pork and then of course
broccoli and beef.
Broccoli, beef, Swiss sour pork mm-hmm. and some vegetable.
Fried rice,
fried noodles. And we have a lot also we have ice cream, the
clove
coming every
yes,
year.
Yes.
Then G&G donated enough orange. Every table has a lot of orange.
Just, yes.
Then we have a finger full for the wonton skin
mm-hmm.
and lots of lucky candy too.
Yes, lots of lucky candy that gets tossed from the stage at some point. And when Lucas first went, he didn't know. Now he knows, and he spends a lot of time. Am I going to position myself for the candy? Well, Nancy Wong, thank you. And are you still president of the association?
Yes, I am.
You work so hard and do such a great job.
Thank you.
And you take time out on a Sunday eve, the Sunday before, to come here. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me here.
Well, you bet. And I will see you next Saturday night. And we will be right back with Talk About Honey.
Well, I'm a king bee, buzzing around your hive. Well, I'm a king bee, buzzing around your hive. Well, I can make honey, baby, let me come inside. I'm young and able to buzz all night long. I'm young and able to buzz all night long. Well, when you hear me buzzing, baby, some stinging is going on. Well, buzz a while. Sting it then. Well, I'm a king bee, want you to be my queen. Well, I'm a king bee, want you to be my queen.
Together we can make honey the world have never seen.
Thanks again to Nancy Wong. She always, you know, I think, oh, do I have time to go? Every time she comes on and talks about it, it's like, well, of course I have time to go. How could I miss another lion dance and, you know, dragon dance and just all of the unique fun that takes place at the Sonoma County Lunar New Year celebration. And now it is on to bees, a celebration of another kind. And if you've never seen bees swarm, it's really interesting. I had two hives, two supers, professional hives that a keeper had at my house in my backyard. And I was sitting out in one spring day. I started thinking, wow, they're a little louder than usual. And they're really loud. And now the cat's acting kind of spooked and wants to go in the house. And they were just hovering. And they were almost done before. It's like, oh, they're swarming. And it was really kind of exciting. And I wish that I'd realized it earlier. And on that note, I will introduce Lori Bounsell, Swarm Chairperson.
Yes, hi. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you for contacting me. It was so perfect. And then also Christine Kurtz, President of the Sonoma County Beekeepers Association. So what is happening right now in the world of bees?
Well, right now is a pretty exciting time for beekeepers because we are watching our hives begin to grow after a winter break.
And they're there, but they're what, just sleeping and eating and keeping care of the queen during the winter?
Right. They reduce their population down in the wintertime, which means they're going to consume less honey and they're going to take a little bit of a break. The queen won't be laying any eggs. And then as the winter dies down and spring comes on, she begins laying more eggs. This generally begins right after the winter solstice. And so the population begins to grow and grow and grow. So that's why it's pretty exciting for us, because we're coming out of this winter dormancy and we're seeing our hives become more and more active. And it's a pretty exciting thing to watch. And we know when we see this type of activity that we might be in the clear that our hive is going to survive through the winter. As you know, bees are facing quite a few
challenges.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. So it's nice.
Now, how do you see the activity? Is it simply that you see bees coming and going, or is there something else?
Several things happen. We see more activity at the hive entrance right now, so more bees coming and going. And we see that they're bringing in loads of pollen on their back legs. So they've been out foraging for nectar and pollen. And we see that coming into the hive. And when we see pollen coming into the hive, it's a pretty good indicator that our queen has started laying eggs, because that pollen is a source of food for the babies. So we know that, you know, our queen is beginning to ramp up for spring and starting to lay more and more eggs every day. And that hive's doing good. And hopefully we'll make it through the harsh part of winter, even our wet, cold spring, and that we have a good, successful hive.
How is the state of the bee in Sonoma County and our hives, particularly, and maybe actually make the distinction between wild or feral colonies and managed colonies? I don't think most people understand that.
That might be a better
question for Christine,
right?
Me. The state of bees are in trouble everywhere in the whole world, actually, in most of the
really?
countries
so
we have.
It's worldwide.
It's worldwide. And scientists all over the place are trying to figure out what is going on. A lot of things in the news talk about CCD, which is colony collapse disorder. Mm-hmm. And but there's a lot of things happening with bees that are much bigger than just CCD. What they're thinking, just going back to CCD, what they're thinking about CCD is that it's a combination of several things. They can't pinpoint it on one thing. Mm-hmm. And all the latest research is pointing to a combination of poor nutrition, pesticides, pests and pathogens, combination of all those things together.
Mm-hmm. Now, the poor nutrition, would that be that they can't forage for the food that they need? They're not finding it?
Yes, and I mean, we have a reduced foraging
right, okay,
because
yeah.
of the way we do farming. Mm-hmm. Because as our population grow, we need to find new ways of doing agriculture. Mm-hmm. And so monoculture has come into play where farmers grow one crop for rows and rows and acres and acres and acres and pretty much keep those areas clear of everything else.
Yeah.
And even though if it's a crop that needs bees for pollination, to have bees just eat one source of nectar is not good nutrition for them. Mm. Kind of like for people, too. If you yeah. were asked to eat baked potatoes for 6 weeks, I don't think you would be feeling very well after those
yeah.
6 weeks. So poor nutrition comes that. It is also a lot of less forage than in the past. We have a lot of grazing lands that are being eaten down by our animals, and there's not enough. All the flowers are being eaten. The wildflowers are being mm-hmm. eaten. We also have the change in weather patterns, which are also changing the type of plants that bloom at certain times. Either they bloom too early or too late, and our bees aren't quite acclimated to what's going on with that.
Right.
So a lot of things. Pesticides is another thing,
sure.
which a lot of us are aware of today. And we have a whole new generation of pesticides that are systemic, where they coat the seeds with the pesticide.
Thank you, Monsanto.
And so the pesticide grows into the plant. So it's in the leaves, it's in the nectar, it's in the pollen.
And that will affect whomever eats it.
Absolutely. And also what they're finding out is that it doesn't maybe kill them immediately, but bees are hoarders. They like to store their pollen. They like to store their honey. And so they will later feed that to their young. And mm-hmm. so it accumulates more and more into mm-hmm. their system.
Mm-hmm.
And then it affects the hive. So it's really hard to correlate those two
right.
because it takes time.
Sure.
So they can say, we did tests and then nobody died in 24 hours. This pesticide is perfectly fine. And to find out, no, it really isn't. We need much longer testing periods to uh-huh. find out what those pesticides do to our beneficial insects.
Yeah. Now, if this is a problem worldwide, what's the level of alarm? Are the right people? I mean, I know that organizations like Sonoma County Beekeepers, anyone who works with bees, I feel we're so lucky to have you. And it's just such great work. But what about on a larger level? Is agribusiness, the United Nations, agriculture, ministers, what's happening?
I think a lot of scientists are working on these issues. There's mm-hmm. universities, studying all different mm-hmm. aspects, from the genetics point of view to the pesticides point of view to the weather point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all trying to pull their resources to figure out what is going on with our bees. And of course, us as backyard beekeeper are trying to do our job as helping with the whole cause of helping the bees out.
Mm-hmm.
And we can be a little kinder to the bees by the way we treat our bees, mm-hmm. which is very different than maybe a commercial beekeepers
sure.
would have to treat their bees.
How many members does the organization have here?
I think we have about 325 around
awesome.
There.
That's a good number.
Membership. It's a really, yeah, it's been growing tremendously.
Uh-huh. I know there's a lot of interest.
Yes.
Is it Serge?
Serge Levesque, yes.
He's been on, he was on Mouthful a number of years ago. I've done several shows on beekeeping over the 17 years of Mouthful. And I know that JC is doing classes, various organizations do classes.
Yes.
So
yes.
Beekeepers are healthy in Sonoma County.
Yes. And if anybody's interested, please go on our website. We have a wonderful website. It's sonomabees.org.
And we'll always, sonomabees.org, and we'll give all that information mm-hmm. again at the end of the hour. So if you don't have a pencil, have one by 5 to 8. And then you'll be able to write it down. But you can also go to the Mouthful's Facebook page, and I'll put this up as well. And I'll put a link to the organization.
Thank you.
So let's take a little musical break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about what it means when bees swarm, and also what you do. Okay, Bumble Boogie by Bee Bumble and the Stingers, an essential song on any show about bees and beekeeping. So now we're going to talk about what it means when bees swarm, what they do. And it's, I mean, everything about bees is interesting. I mean, the way they live and the dance they do to tell where the nectar, I mean, everything. So what's happening when what is swarming?
Well, swarming is actually an act of reproduction for a beehive. And when they become too congested, as I mentioned, the queen is starting to ramp up on her laying, and each day she can lay, what, up to 2,000 eggs a day. So it takes about 3 weeks for a worker bee to be born once the egg is laid. And so you can imagine the population explosion.
She's doing like 2,000 a day?
A day.
And it takes 3 weeks of caring for them until they're a bee.
Until they're hatched out and they're a bee, right. So you can imagine if she's 2,000 a day each day, at least 2,000 bees are being born in a hive, and they reach a critical mass inside the hive, and at some point something's got to give. And mm-hmm. So what happens is, you know, in a nutshell, they split the hive, and the old queen will leave with about half the population, which can be... The old queen will go, and a new queen will be born in the existing mother hive.
And they do that by feeding royal jelly.
They
is that
do,
right?
They do. That's correct.
I've paid attention when I've had other guests on bees.
Yes. And so when they reach this critical mass and they need to expel half the population to reduce the population mm-hmm. within the hive, when the queen is ready to leave, she will take half that population. And as they issue from their original nest or their hive box, wherever they happen to be living, you will see this cloud of bees in the air, and you will generally hear them first because they're quite loud. And a lot of people are scared of this. They're not really sure what this means, and I think Hollywood has played a big part in contributing to that. But really what they're doing is they're reproducing. So you're splitting the hive, essentially, mm-hmm. and a new hive will form. And those bees will swarm in the air, and in a very short amount of time, within usually 10 or 15 minutes, the queen is going to land. And not too far from the original hive. She'll land somewhere in the trees or on a fence post or a grape stake or something like that. And the rest of the bees that issued with her will gather around her to protect her.
So that's the signal. The signal is the action of the queen.
Well, I believe that I don't know that they're absolutely sure what the signal is, who it is that says it's time to go.
Okay.
That's more of
when they settle down,
they are going to cluster
around the queen.
The queen,
okay.
Right, and sometimes they'll look like a basketball-sized grouping of bees together in a tree on a branch or something.
And at that
like
point,
that.
They're not hunting. They're not out to out to sting humans.
They are house
they're
hunting.
For a home.
They're
yeah.
basically real estate yeah. hunting at that point. They will issue scout bees from that cluster, and those scout bees are going to go out, and they're going to try to find a new appropriate home, and they're going to investigate crevices in your home or, you know, in another empty cavity of a tree, and they're just basically looking for a new place to live. They're not looking to injure you or sting you or attack you at all. In fact, they could probably care less about you. They really just are looking to find a new place for their queen to reside so that she can get back to laying 2,000 eggs a day and so that they can reproduce, you know, on a grand scale.
And then at the point the scouts find something suitable, how do we know how the scouts tell everybody else where to go?
We do. The scouts will do the waggle dance, as you might have had on your show before, and they will dance. And Tom Seeley has written an excellent book called Honeybee Democracy, and he goes into, you know, excruciating detail about this process. It's a really good read if you're interested in
Honeybee,
that.
Honeybee. I love reading books about this.
Yes, Honeybee Democracy by Dr. Thomas Seeley.
Honeybee. Cool.
And so they do. They come back and they dance the location of this suitable hive. And in the book, he discusses how they come to consensus on which is the most appropriate new home for them. So
that's so interesting.
It's a great book, and it's a really good read if you really want to get into detail about how they house hunt, you know, how they find appropriate real estate.
Yeah, it's fascinating. What should somebody do? Say you come across this, like, basketball of bees.
That's a great question, and thank you for asking that. Well, the first thing you can do is not panic and really, you know, marvel at just how extraordinary.
Grab your camera.
Yeah, grab your camera. Just how extraordinary this act of reproduction is, because it's really quite fascinating. Just take a deep breath and really enjoy it, because it's not something that everybody gets to see. I've been fortunate to see quite a few, and each time I just stand still and listen and observe and watch the process. But once you're done watching the process, you can go right to our website at sonomabees.org, and we have a list of our members who actually will come and rescue that swarm and rehome it for you. And we have over 100 different members on our swarm list. And you can go through the list and look for wherever you happen to be, which region, because we cover up to 5 counties. We're in Sonoma, Mendocino, Napa, and Marin counties are the areas that our beekeepers will travel to collect a swarm. And it's important for a beekeeper because, as you know, the bees are they're threatened, and we lose colonies as beekeepers for various reasons. And this is one way that we can restock our hives and help protect and rehome these bees and provide an appropriate box. And we can also, keep the homeowner who has this basketball size group of bees from, you know, worrying about the bees maybe finding the appropriate home in their chimney someplace where they really don't want them.
Yeah.
And so someone who sees a swarm like this can go to our website and look for somebody on the list who is in your area and start calling. And if you don't reach somebody right away, go to the next person on the list, because you'll find somebody. So please keep trying, you know, until you find somebody.
But how much time do you have?
That's a good question. It depends on each swarm.
Sure.
But usually, what would you say about it?
Well,
it can be up to 3 days.
It can be up to 3 days, but it can also be very quickly. Right. It depends really what they're finding and
but it's
what
not like
the consensus process
minutes.
Is going
no,
going
it's not,
on.
Yeah, it's a little
but
longer.
Mostly they're probably there for a day or so.
Oh, okay.
Sometimes two.
Mm-hmm.
But I think time is of the essence because you don't know.
Right.
You know, you don't know.
So
if
deal with
they
it
they
right
might
away.
Found a perfect cavity that they think is perfect, you know, and it's in the eaves of your of your house.
Yes.
And then it becomes once they establish themselves in a structure or somewhere else, it becomes an established hive, and it's not anymore called a swarm retrieval.
Right.
Then you need almost a professional to come and extract that hive, and they have to, by that time the bees have built some comb and the beekeeper will have to cut that comb out and regraft it on some frames. And we have a handful of people who are doing it. Laura, do you want to talk about
that? And those people
that?
Are listed on the website as well.
And comb, that's, they use wax to build their combs.
Correct. They create wax, small flakes that they produce from their abdomen, and then they will chew that in their mandible, their mouth parts, and they will go ahead and create the comb from the wax that they secrete.
And they're so symmetrical.
So
it's remarkable. Looking at natural honeycomb is just astonishing that
it's
they
fantastic.
Can do this.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it really is.
So if you do have bees living in a structure in your home or in your barn, we do have members who will provide the service of extracting those bees for a fee because it is a very time-consuming, labor-intensive job to do. But they can find that list on the same swarm list on our website.
What is the difference between a feral colony? Or I don't know if the right word is feral or wild. Maybe there's both.
I think feral is appropriate.
Okay. What's the difference between, is a feral colony one that's living in a tree, living in a barn, that sort of thing?
Yes, I would say that's correct.
Yes, correct.
Okay.
I would say that's right. And a managed, you know, colonies is what a beekeeper has in their backyard.
And they live in supers, right?
In supers. Supers are it's another name for a box.
Box.
and there's different styles. Beekeepers have, you know, those square boxes that are Langstroth boxes, or there's Ware boxes, or there's top bar hives. There's different styles that people choose to raise bees.
If you're driving through an orchard or something or a field and you see a stack of boxes, wooden boxes, it's very often, it's like, if you know what they look like, it's like, oh, there's some bees.
Yes.
Is it both feral colonies and managed colonies that are undergoing the difficulties, I would imagine, because they're all foraging from the same places?
Yes, and at one point there was some chatter that we had lost almost all of the feral colonies. I'm not sure if that's absolutely true.
Well,
or what,
the latest
degree?
Is that they're also rebounding.
Yes.
The neat thing about feral colonies, nobody is doing anything to them, so they can through natural selection
get stronger.
So that really the strong bees survive, and the weaker bees will die off. And so we're always really excited when we know where a feral colony is and hoping we get a swarm from a feral colony, hoping that they have the stronger genetics to survive. Because bees are actually amazing things. They've been on this planet for millions and millions of years and have gone through all sorts of climate change and all sorts of different things that happen to our planet. So they're amazing. They have an amazing system for survival through their genetics. But of course today we've definitely bombarded them with a lot more than they ever have.
We've given them a lot of challenges.
Yeah, we basically have created a perfect storm for our bees, and they are definitely an indicator species.
Right.
They're telling us what we're doing with our environment. And basically they're telling us, you know, watch out, but look what you're doing, because if you continue on this path, we won't be here for you.
Now, go ahead.
No, that's
fine. I was going to say, I've heard that if there were no bees, there would be no human life. Is that extreme or is that accurate?
Well, one of three bites that you put in your mouth is the responsibility of a pollinator, including honeybees.
Yeah.
So yes, I would have to say there's quite a bit of truth to that, and I think
it's really thousands of species of plants that they're responsible
yes.
for.
Yes, and directly and indirectly. For example, mm-hmm. they also pollinate alfalfa, which is fed to horses and cows mm-hmm. and other animals. So those may be not going directly into your mouth, but they're also feeding you through the meat.
Yeah, they're an important part of the food
right,
chain.
Yes. For the food
yeah,
chain.
I think the way I've read it, it's been put as like all life on Earth would disappear if honeybees vanished. Now, honeybees, there are a lot of different species of bees. There's solitary bees that live in the ground. There are carpenter bees that drill in my porch. And then there are honeybees. And I would assume that is the honeybee a single species of bee, or is it a category with lots of species?
Well, the honeybee, the honeybee is its own kind of species, and mm-hmm. there's several different
okay,
kinds.
There's
Russian honeybees, there's okay. Italian honeybees.
Okay, there we go.
There's that. Uh-huh. But then there's also the native bees who have been here before we imported the honeybees mm-hmm. into this country, and they are more so. Solitary bees, they don't uh-huh. congregate in large groups in uh-huh. one cavity. But I think what it's important for people to understand is that we need very healthy ecosystems. So when you plant mm-hmm. a garden, you want to attract all sorts of bees. You want to plant for the honeybees, but you also want to plant for the bumblebees and for the solitary bees
and
for
the mason bees. And a bumblebee is not a honeybee.
Correct.
No,
but it's part of our ecosystem.
Sure.
And what I've learned through becoming more and more of a gardener is that when I see more and more species coming into my garden, mm-hmm. that everything is healthier.
Mm-hmm. Now, is planting a hedgerow, we're starting to hear more talk about hedgerows, which are just lots and lots of different plants in a long row that you might put next to, say, all your tomato plants or something like that. Is that one way to really attract a big variety of bees is through hedgerows?
What it is, specifically for honeybees, is that they are flower specific. They like to find large amounts of a certain flower.
Oh, okay.
Because they will go home and recruit some of the other worker bees to go and gather some of this food. Mm-hmm. If there's only one flower, it's not worth the recruiting.
So you want a lot of...
So, yes.
Okay.
So you want, if you're planting for bees, plant a lot of one variety.
Do they like, I'm trying to think, what did I go, cosmos?
Right. So don't just plant one cosmos.
Yeah, plant like 50.
A drift of cosmos or a drift of lavender or a drift of sunflowers.
Okay, that makes sense. I've seen them. I have a lot of lavender, and they'll hang out in the lavender garden for a long time.
Yeah, lavender is a wonderful plant because it blooms for a very long time mm-hmm. and sometimes even does a second bloom mm-hmm. in the fall. And they definitely like the lavender.
And I think it's important to plant for seasons. You want mm-hmm. plants that are going to bloom in the spring, plants that are going mm-hmm. to bloom in the summer, again in the fall, so that they have a food source year-round or at least during their very uh-huh. busy season.
And they'll forage what? Is it a 2-mile radius?
2 to 3 mile radius uh-huh. around their hive.
Right.
And they can go up, if they're really hungry, they can go up to 5 miles.
Really?
I think at that point they start reaching mm-hmm. that point of diminishing returns where it takes more energy
to
fly 5 miles than what they can bring back to the hive. But they would go that far mm-hmm. if there was what we call a dearth, meaning a lack of nectar, mm-hmm. lack of pollen available for them.
Yeah. Now, we haven't really talked much about honey yet. And I think most people don't realize that honey's a byproduct, and honey's not the main activity. Pollination is the main activity, and then honey is they make a lot. They can't stop making honey, so there's some left for us.
Right, and as a beekeeper, you really want to manage the amount of honey that you pull from your hives. You want to make sure when you button your hives up for the winter that you've left them enough honey to survive on. So, mm-hmm. When I got into beekeeping, my primary goal was not to have honey at all. Mm-hmm. My primary goal is to provide a habitat for beneficial pollinators, which, we're losing them at such a rapid mm-hmm. rate. And so, the honey is just a bonus to me, mm-hmm. and I'm happy to have it. And I feel it's a nice gift to get back from the bees.
And you brought...
I, I did. We each brought a little bit of honey.
Yeah, we each brought some honey, and so the viewers can't, the listeners can't see this, but you can tell they're completely
very different
colors.
Yes,
and
very
you'll notice, too, once you taste them, they taste very, very differently. Uh-huh. And so from depending on which areas they are, and sometimes even from one hive to another that are next to each other, mm-hmm. the taste is different depending on uh-huh. what the workers have decided to forage.
Uh-huh. You know? Well, let's try them.
Please do.
And one is very, very dark.
This is very dark. And we did a tasting of this honey a few weeks ago as a small group of beekeepers. We got together to do a workshop, and everybody seemed to like it. But I'm partial to the paler, lighter, more golden honeys, uh-huh. but you can see this is more of a darker, almost molasses, almost maple syrup.
And I'm almost the opposite. I like the darker better than the lighter, so maybe we should trade some honey.
Yeah, uh-huh. that's a good idea.
Okay, let's see. That's a really good honey, but it has, it always tickles the top of my palate. It has, right on the finish, almost a suggestion of citrus and of salt.
Interesting.
And I find that just really interesting. I haven't tasted that before, but it's quite good. And it does, some honeys I find have a forward slight bitterness to them, mm-hmm. which I don't care for. And this doesn't have that at all. And now I'm going from dark to light.
Is your spring,
but I'm not double dipping. And this is, now where did that one I just tasted, where is that one from?
That one is a Napa Valley honey, and it's a variety of sources. I'm just going to call it wildflower honey because we don't have one specific crop that our bees pull from. They pull from a 2-mile, 3-mile radius mm-hmm. from our home, and so whatever they happen to be foraging on is... And we do have quite a bit of oak tree, so there could be a little bit of oak tree, what they call honeydew, in there, which is actually a secretion from another insect. Isn't that correct?
Yes, correct.
Oh, really? Yeah. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Now, this one, where's this one from?
This one is from Northwest Petaluma.
Okay. It's very different.
Very different.
And again, it has a real distinctive flavor that reminds me of something, and
it's hard to pinpoint sometimes.
It's mid-palate, and it reminds me of a fruit, something exotic, almost passion fruit-like or something. Both, it's also very good. These are two of the more individual honeys I've ever tasted. You know, they don't taste at all generic. You can really get that taste of a place.
Well, that's one of the nice things about knowing beekeepers as a source of your honey. You know where your honey's coming from. Yeah. When you buy honey from a supermarket, chances are it is from numerous hives all mixed together.
Yeah.
And so you really don't know what this, you know, if it's a single source honey or what, you know, what the bees were actually foraging on.
Yeah, it was really nice for a while. I would come out twice a year and there would be two jars of honey sitting on top of my car, and they were from the hives that were at my house, but they're gone now.
Mm-hmm. And another thing about certain honeys you buy in the supermarket is that they've been heated too.
Yeah, right.
They're pasteurized.
Yeah.
And so you kill the beneficial ingredients in the honey, and it also prevents it from crystallizing. Mm-hmm. So when you buy raw honey, it often comes in a crystallized form or will eventually crystallize, which is actually a really good sign.
Uh-huh.
And you can still cook with it. It melts. Mm-hmm. It melts in your tea. It's easier to spread on your toast.
If you need to melt it, you just put it in a little pan of hot water
exactly.
and it
That's
uncrystallizes.
It. Yeah. Yep.
You know, we're almost out of time. I've got a couple of quick questions. First of all, with the recommendations you were making about flowers and all that sort of thing, is there any of that kind of information on your website?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, great. Okay, so people who aren't necessarily keeping bees can learn a lot about what to do to keep bees happy.
Mm-hmm. Right. In fact, we have a brand new T-shirt that our association is putting out with just such information.
Oh,
so,
cool.
Yeah, I brought one
right here.
Oh,
look at that.
And it says, "Help the Bees." And and on the back of the T-shirt, it says, "Buy organic, eat raw local honey, support your beekeepers, plant a garden for all seasons, don't use pesticides or fungicides." Remember, sides means kill, and doesn't only kill the bad bugs, it also kills
the good
bugs.
Yes.
And then the last thing you can do is become a beekeeper.
Beekeeper. Well, that's great. So it's a great resource, and it's SonomaBees.org.
SonomaBees.org, and maybe you can talk about our meetings in case somebody is interested in becoming a beekeeper. We would love
yes,
to have them come to the meetings.
Yes, every second Monday of the month, we meet at the 4-H building, starting at 6 o'clock with a little bit of a social hour, and then we usually have a speaker from 7 to 8.
And where is the
And that's the 4-H building in Werner Park,
oh, okay.
And it's behind the grocery,
grocery outlet.
And there's a exercise place there. So it's the building behind, so it's a little bit hard to find.
And you probably have this on your website as well.
Yes, of course.
So you can get the information. And I'm going to follow up with you. I want to write about you guys. I just think
Thank you so much.
Great that you're doing what you're doing. And one last question. Whatever happened to killer bees? 10 years ago, that was like, oh, my God, the killer bees are coming from South America. You don't hear anything about them anymore.
Because they're not here in this area.
Okay.
They are definitely in Los Angeles.
Oh,
and beekeeping in Los Angeles is a whole different story.
Is it because they dominate a hive if they get into a hive?
Yeah, they can take over a hive, and they tend to take over a whole area. They are very aggressive, and
swarms.
When you're in Los Angeles, you don't want to gather swarms down there. There's people who do that professionally because you really need to know how to handle those bees.
You probably need a full suit.
And so people who do beekeeping, like we do in their backyards, come and get their bees in Oregon or California, north of California. So they make sure that they have gentle and Italian honeybees.
Italian honeybees.
Yeah.
We love the Italians, don't we?
Yeah.
And on that note, Lori Bounsell, Christine Kurtz, thank you so much for coming. This has just been really fascinating, and I really look forward to hearing more about bees this year.
Thank you so much for having us on and allowing us to share our knowledge with the public, because we really think it's important that people learn more about our pollinators, especially honeybees, and if they find themselves with a swarm, which it is swarm season, they know who to call.
Yes, and I will put that on Mouthful's Facebook page as well, and I'll put it in the newspaper as well. So on that note, we are out of time. Time flies on Mouthful. I have to get home because it is the season 3 finale of Downton Abbey starting at 9 o'clock tonight. And I hear that we're supposed to have a nice big box of handkerchiefs or Kleenex with us. So there you go. Meet me back here next week for another episode of Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour. And thanks so much to Kirby for engineering.
Children, it is plain but true. God knows if a preacher preaches long enough.
Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour, is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan, who also selects Mouthful's music. Live episodes are engineered by Michael Young and occasionally by Mary Moore Campagna. Mark Fuller is Mouthful's recording and post-production engineer. Podcasts are available at iTunes and krcb.org. For more information, to suggest a guest, and to find out how to be a guest yourself, email catsmilk@sonic.net or send a message via Mouthful's Facebook page.
Got some beans and good cornbread. Listen to what the preacher says.